Energy Transition, episode 41. Hello, Irene Slav and David Blackmon.
Hello.
Hi there.
Good. Today, the topic is a looming diesel crisis, a title David gave to us. It's very interesting title. Thank you, David. And the point is the following, is related to diesel applications. So this is so important in our society nowadays. Engines for trucks, trains, boats, hospitals, generators to electricity. Maybe we could say that diesel, let me move here. This may be one of the most important refined oil products we have in our society nowadays. And David, do you know why people are talking about diesel shortage that may be coming?
Yes, sure. Yes, and there's no question. It's the most critical transportation fuel we have. Everything we consume moves to market on planes, trains, and automobiles powered by diesel. Jet fuel is a form of diesel. It's the fuel that powers the global economy. And we are particularly in the northeastern United States, but also in other countries around the world, facing potential shortages of diesel fuel this winter. And a lot of it has to do with disruptions in supply chains. A lot of it has to do with inadequate refining capacity. And that has been caused by a variety of different factors in the United States. The problem, of course, has been that we haven't built any new refineries in our country since 1978, 44 years without a new refinery. We've had expansions since then, but no new greenfield refineries. And we've lost a lot of refining capacity, particularly in the northeastern United States in recent years, due to a variety of factors. We have half the refining capacity in the northeastern United States today than we did in 2009. We've had at least two refiners go completely out of business because of the cost of mandates to refine biodiesel at their refineries and alcohol, corn-based ethanol that also is very costly in a refining operation. And then others have chosen to convert refining capacity to refining biofuels as well. And so you end up with a shortage of capacity to refine diesel that is used to move our products to market. And we're very low on inventories right now, not just in the United States, but also I understand in Europe as well. And it could be a real train wreck this winter. And then the final thing I just want to point out is we also have a potential rail strike looming in the United States that would make matters infinitely worse if we can't head off that rail strike.
And in Europe, diesel is very intensive in terms of consumption, because family cars probably use diesel too. It's totally different from Brazil. Brazil, family cars are gasoline. We do not have diesel for family cars.
Oh, yes, diesel cars are very popular, especially German cars. Used to be. Now they're being discouraged, as far as I understand, because it's more polluting than petrol. But yes, it's a popular fuel for both transport trucks, freight transport vehicles, and for family cars. There were plans to phase it out, but there are now plans to phase out all internal combustion engines. So, this should be fine after 2035. But until then, and especially this winter, as David said, we might have a problem. And I think the European Union sort of found a loophole in its sanctions against Russia by, I suspect, I have no information that this actually happened, but the European Union agreed to do the Bulgarian government's plans to make a deal with Lukoil, the owner of our only refinery. to continue producing fuels, which can then be exported from Bulgaria to the European Union, because they will no longer be Russian fuels, they will be produced on EU territory. So that's one way to secure some, you know, some diesel supply for the winter, in addition to imports from China, I imagine, and from India.
In Europe, do they use for heating, diesel for heating too?
I don't know, really. I don't know what people use for heating, but it's not the same as in the American Northeast, when where most people live in houses and they have diesel generators or diesel heaters or
whatever. Call it home heating oil, but it's really a form of diesel.
I think gas is a lot more popular for heating in Europe.
Which
is good news for the diesel shortage. And again, Europe doesn't have enough refineries because it didn't think it would need a lot of refineries.
After all, demand for oil and oil products was supposed to be declining right now, and instead it's expanding.
We were supposed to not be using as much oil and fuels and natural gas.
Right.
It's interesting because Brazil imports from the United States almost 400,000 barrels per day of diesel. It's a big amount of diesel. So, and you can ask why we are importing if you are producing oil more than we need. Because the same that David mentioned before, so we did not make some revamps or new refineries for more than 30 years. So our refineries are not, let's say, available to produce diesel enough for us. So it's a very big problem.
It's a huge investment in your refinery, isn't it?
Yeah, we can make these revamps and make this available. It takes time, 2, 3, 4 years.
And money.
Money.
And a lot of money. Yeah, to build a new greenfield refinery would be a 10-year project, whether in Brazil or the United States or Europe, and it would cost, you know, upwards of $10 billion or more to complete the project. And when you have a government in the United States, and in the U.S. isn't alone in this, you know, saying that we want all refineries to be completely out of business in 10 years, well, investors would be insane to improve investments in a new refinery. It wouldn't make any sense. And so a lot of this is caused by simply by the rhetoric of climate change and climate alarmism, causing people to not make what would otherwise be perfectly rational investment decisions in new refining capacity, for which there is enormous demand, and demand continues to rise. Yeah. But because of all the political rhetoric, investors are scared away from you know, these investments.
And we cannot replace diesel with wind or solar. So.
Not yet. What I find particularly ironic is that China is perhaps the only country that is actively building its refining capacity, and several Middle Eastern states. But China is the champion. And I remember about 3 years ago, when a couple of new refineries were being launched in China, and there were analyses from Bloomberg and, you know, similar, that there will be stranded assets. Well, now it's turning out that they're not going to be stranded assets, and Europe is going to be dependent on China for its fuel, in addition to its solar panels, which I really find ironic.
And India is also expanding its refining
capacity. India too, And, they do need a lot of fuel.
Right. Because those governments have not fallen into this climate alarmism religion, which is essentially what it is. And
ideological,
Right. It's those two countries are acting very rationally in their national interest, regardless of what you think about the nature of the Chinese government, and it is an oppressive government, but it is a rational actor in its national interests where energy is concerned. And I don't think we can say the same thing for the democracies of the Western world these days.
Interesting. This Luca is asking something. Everything.
Oh, energy. Yeah.
Greetings, energy buffs. No problems in the USA with Maduro's oil. Hooray for democracy. Yeah. Yes, Luca had a great tweet out on Twitter when I woke up this morning that is getting a lot of activity on it.
Yeah, that's right. Stuart has something related to what you mentioned, David. Let me
put Stu Turley, our friend Stu. Yes, sir. What do you think about Biden approving Venezuela and Chevron for 6 months? And Chevron saying it would take years. Well, I mean, this is classic Bidenism, isn't it? I don't know what else to say about that. This is just very typical kind of policymaking for this particular presidency. And it's very destructive to our energy security.
Yeah, it sounds like a bad joke, but really...
It really does. And I'm reaching out right now. If anyone from Chevron is watching, I'm trying to reach out and find somebody at your company that will give me a quote or two for a Forbes story on all this. So please call me.
Yeah, interesting. Irina Granfinal saying something.
Do any of you have grave concerns for not this winter, but next winter? Yes, I do. As Europe and many other parts of the globe face much greater self-imposed energy constraints. Yes, funnily enough, on Twitter, some people on Twitter from Bulgaria tried to mock this emerging concern, saying that it's Russian propaganda that next winter in Europe will be even more difficult. Well, no, it's not Russian propaganda. It's reality. And next winter will be much more difficult. And the European Union said so. I mean, the Energy Commissioner, Kadri Simson, said that the gas price cap, if you'll excuse my mentioning this other joke, is actually meant to be in effect from next spring, when the next refill season begins. So there's enough gas for winter 2023, which basically meant that she admitted the European Union expects gas prices to be much higher next year. And of course, they would be, because there will be almost no Russian gas. But back to oil, in the absence of new refineries and being impossible to build new refineries, as David pointed out, over the next decade, even if there were investors willing to bet on it, yes, the market for fuels will be tight and will become more reliant on China. I will not tire of repeating this, because it goes against all the plans, all the energy independence plans that European governments and Brussels itself, the Commission, are making. And they're working against themselves actively.
Yeah, and think about this where natural gas storage is concerned, because Europe was able to fill its natural gas storage in preparation for this winter by accessing a lot of Russian natural gas via pipeline.
Exactly.
And one of the big concerns is for next winter, Putin is continuing to ratchet up the geopolitical pain every week in Europe, and very likely will cut off natural gas by pipeline entirely. There's still, you know, natural gas from Russia coming into Europe through Ukraine, at least one pipeline that goes through Ukraine. That's likely to disappear between now and next winter. You're going to have to somehow fill your gas storage with LNG imports from the U.S. and elsewhere around the world that costs five times as much as what you pay for Russian oil coming through on that remaining pipeline. So it's could be a really terrible situation next winter for Europe. It's really... Of course, there's time to try to deal with it, and hopefully they'll be able to figure some things out. But it's a tough scenario.
LNG exports from the United States is, vulnerable. You cannot make sure that for a long time you can have this gas from the United States to Europe.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to go where the market directs it, and price has a big thing to do with it. Long-term supply agreements have a lot to do with it. And if European governments, Germany's government is a good example of this, not willing to enter into long-term supply agreements, then, you know, potentially they're not going to have access to some of that U.S. LNG. And that's just the way the market works.
That's right.
Hey, Doug, the EIA and IEA have both estimated crude oil increases through 2050. Seems they are speaking from two sides. Yes. Well, yeah, particularly the IEA. I mean, the EIA has been pretty consistent about that, which is the U.S. Energy Information Administration. But as I'm sure Irina would like to point out to us, the IEA has been less consistent. I'll let Irina go. She's always more entertaining on this subject.
Well, it's really ridiculous that I've said it numerous times. I'm probably getting tiresome already. But yes, they keep contradicting themselves. I mean, we saw it with the net zero energy roadmap, and then suddenly we need more investments in oil. I can't even keep up. I mean, when was this said? Is this something new from the IEA? Really, 1 month they say oil demand is going to rise. Next month they say it's going to fall, which is okay. It's normal. It's forecast. It's uncertain. But over the long term, you can't just throw forecast predictions rather around and hope they materialize, even if they do not get their basis in reality. I'm actually surprised that the International Energy Agency said that demand for crude oil, if that's what Doug meant, is going to rise through 2050. Mm-hmm. This will be a big departure from its, main refrain that
from just a year ago when they told us we needed to cut off all new investments in oil.
May 2021, remarkable.
Months ago too, this year they've been saying that because of the price increase in crude oil, demand will naturally decline. But now prices are declining too because of fears of demand in China.
Right.
So this will probably stimulate demand elsewhere. Tends to happen normally.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not just those two agencies, too. We should also point out that other really widely recognized experts, like the BP annual forecast, which everyone looks at, like OPEC's, you know, monthly forecast, have been very consistent in projecting rising crude oil demand through at least 2040 and really even through 2050. And so the IEA, you know, with its report in May of 2021 was a real outlier in all of this. And among the experts, not just in the US, but globally. And when you see something like that, it always stands out to you and you wonder what is really motivating it. Is that a pure scientific analysis based on real data and real truth, or is it strictly political? And I think with the IEA, you have to say it's pretty much strictly political and part of their climate change narrative.
It was wishful thinking. It was never going to happen. And no wonder the Saudi energy minister called it La La Land.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was right.
Yeah.
How about
probably is is Stuart, but his name,
I think that's from Stu again, right?
Yeah.
How about China doubling their coal energy plants?
Not only China, but other countries are recovering.
They're being pragmatic, as David said, they're being rational and pragmatic. They need energy, they're going to get it from every source they have access to.
Yeah. And even Germany is reopening lignite mines and coal plants and, it's because, you know, energy security is national security. We say this all the time, and it's not just us saying it. It's a thing that everyone needs to recognize and stop pretending doesn't exist. It exists. It's real. And we have to have adequate and affordable energy to prosper as a society. And these countries that are using more coal recognize that.
National security, as you said. Perfect.
But you talk about prosperity. Didn't you know that prosperity is old-fashioned? I mean, it's no longer trendy. Nobody needs economic growth. But the thing is that people need heat and electricity to survive, to keep going. It's not even about prosperity. So I would like to see the next ideological talking point in this respect, because really they try to, you know, to convince us that prosperity is not everything. Well, it's not about prosperity. It's about security, physical security, and ultimately survival in places with cold winters.
That's right. That's right. Tom, famous Tom.
Tom Kirkman. Oh, hey, Tom. Will Biden's Inflation Reduction Act do anything except drive energy prices higher in the U.S.? It depends on who you ask about that. My view, obviously, is going to be no. That's exactly what it's intended to do. I mean, that's not just a kind of a side effect. It's actually the clear intent of the law. And but, you know, I mean, that's just a decision we've made politically in the United States. And we saw basically in the midterm elections, the Biden direction on energy receive a tacit endorsement from voters, for better or worse. And, you know, all those subsidies and all the deficit spending attached to the Inflation Reduction Act is going to increase the cost of everything, not just energy, but the cost of everything for American consumers, and is already doing so. And but what can you say? You know, until voters change their voting patterns here in the United States, we're gonna have a continuation of this stuff.
And Stuart has a hilarious comment here.
What about Jeff Bezos telling consumers not to buy his products from Amazon?
That's true.
Man, I missed that one. He is laying off 10,000 employees. Is this because of diesel shortages?
Yeah, because they switched to electric vans or something, I remember. That's probably taking a lot of money to charge, you know.
That's incredible, this one. Let me see here.
There's going to be a lot of layoffs, not just Amazon. We're headed to a season of layoffs in the United States. Oh. That's coming. Mm-hmm. Oil's at 74 due to China demand destruction and social unrest.
Yeah, it looks that way, And possibly the fact that the so-called price cap on Russian oil is not a price cap at all. that probably has some role to play. Well, setting the price cap at the price it is actually trading at right now.
But Didina, do you believe that COVID is coming back to the world?
No, the numbers I saw for China are not particularly impressive.
Only on China,
very huge. I don't keep up with COVID updates elsewhere because, you know, I see the China news because they're directly put in the context of energy and oil demand, but they're not in the thousands.
Something else is happening in China. I don't know what the motivation, Xi's motivation is for what
he's
doing.
I don't know either. Yeah, but it's definitely affecting prices because China is one of the biggest consumers. But I don't see any news about flare-ups of infections elsewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, in Brazil, we are growing a little bit.
But yeah, well, it will be around for years. It will just turn into another kind of flu, as a lot of doctors said as early as 2020. Viruses mutate, they become less dangerous over time, and so on and so forth. We'll just have to get used to living with it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. Stuart. Than a security, really.
Energy security is really a thing, be a country and western song. I used to try to write country and western songs when I was young and creative, and those days are long gone.
Oh, come on. You can always be creative. Music is the only thing we haven't tried. Maybe we should try.
Yeah, we should bring our guitars to the next podcast.
Music.
Yeah.
But let me ask you both. Diesel can be replaced with different energy, or is replaceable, let's see.
Right, go ahead, Arina.
Thanks. I'll just be quick. Right now, I don't think it can be replaced by anything else.
Yeah, I mean, over time, people believe you can replace diesel engines with electric vehicles. And, you know, that's the narrative of the energy transition, which is the name of our blog, our podcast here. And, you know, it's a grand experiment we're engaged in, and over time, but, you know, you have to spend trillions and trillions of dollars on new infrastructure and new vehicles and new technologies and replace all the old infrastructure you had. And that's not going to happen this winter. And we have to figure out a way to get through this winter in the meantime and over the next 30, 40 years while all this grand plan is coming about. But yeah, people believe you can do that. I'm skeptical, as I think everybody's probably figured out. And, you know, we'll see how it all works out. It'll be long after I'm gone.
But David, what do you suggest for Brazilian government if the United States stops sending diesel to us 400,000 barrels per day? May we buy from Russia?
Sure. Well, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? I mean, you have to have the diesel. Again, energy security is national security, and Brazil's government is a rational actor. I think we've seen that, and for its national interests. I hope that continues under the new presidential regime. And if the United States should stupidly move to cut off those exports of diesel, you know, I think Dan Yergin would as he told me in an interview recently, it's important that the United States remain to be seen as a reliable trading partner and supplier of energy. And if you go, you know, limiting exports and restricting these things, then suddenly you're no longer considered to be a reliable supplier, and people are going to want to stop doing business with you. So hopefully it won't come to that.
Not only for diesel, for LNG. Sorry, Irina, sorry.
Yeah, it's a tough balancing act because the Biden administration wants to keep fuels affordable for people in the U.S., for Americans, for voters. And that's at odds with this image of a reliable supplier, not just an image of being a reliable supplier by exporting LNG and fuels in abundance. Maybe, hopefully, not anytime soon, but if they have to choose, it will be a very tough choice.
And this is a very tricky equation. So, energy transition coming or not coming? We do not sure about that. The other side,
it's stuttering right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming. It's not going to be a straight line progression, and it's certainly not going to go according to the flowery narratives we see in the million-dollar commercials on television. But it's coming one way or another.
Yeah, but the other side, we cannot make investments in refineries to make more diesel, because we do not expect to have a long term to recover these investments.
Right.
So this is something tricky for the Caesar, no?
Very. Yeah, absolutely. You have to have major multi-billion dollar investments just to keep the current technology up and running and infrastructure up and running. And, you know, even with these projections of rising oil demand through 2050, well, to build a new refinery, you're going to have to invest. You're going to have to come up with $10 to $12 billion in capital. It's going to take you 10 years to get it open. Mm-hmm. That's going to only leave you 20 years to recover that investment. Yeah. And so even if all the rhetoric around shutting everything down in the next 10 years should calm down and stop being out there from Jennifer Granholm and Joe Biden, companies and investors are still looking at, can I recover that much capital investment in those 20 years where demand's going to continue to rise, according to all these projections? And, you know, these are tough, difficult monetary decisions that the government really needs to stop interfering with and start encouraging, because we're going to need more of all forms of energy, not just oil and gas, as we go through time. And you know, the global economy continues to grow. And it's so unwise, the rhetoric coming out of this administration and out of Europe. It's so unwise for our future. And I really wish people would take a step back and think about what they're doing.
Yeah, me too.
And let's go to the last interaction. Tom.
From Tom Kirkman again, electricity is temporary energy with limited storage, no way to currently replace hydrocarbons with electricity. California is working to mandate that all gasoline and diesel trucks be banned and replaced by electric trucks. Thought on how big a disaster this will be for California. Well, it's going to be an enormous train wreck if they continue to go down that path. But Gavin Newsom's administration doesn't seem to really care about that. It's all about collecting enough votes to get reelected again next time. And they don't. And that's a big problem in the United States. Our politicians only think through the next election cycle, and there is no long-term thinking on any of this. And so it's strictly short-term thinking and stimulus from the next election cycle that leads to these crazy decisions, and voters who don't pay attention and continue these same voting patterns will end up being the victims of the train wreck.
Yeah.
It's not a unique problem for you.
No, I know it's similar in Europe, isn't it? And I'm sure in Brazil.
Very similar in Brazil too. Tom, yes.
If the batteries can be recycled and made cheaper, might have a chance. Fry battery out of Norway, very cool. We do have cutting edge new battery technology on the horizon. Vanadium battery technology in particular is getting widely distributed in China and other growing economies. And hopefully part of what's incentivized by the Inflation Reduction Act will be new, more effective battery technology
it will still take years.
But it will take years and decades. And and vanadium has no application in electric vehicles either. Vanadium is a stationary battery technology only, and a very promising one.
That's right.
We will need storage for all these solar panels and wind farms. Yeah.
Where the application for that mainly is. The lithium ion batteries are so much lighter in weight that really, electric vehicles are stuck with lithium ion technology right now. And the things you see coming along for the future are really mainly stationary battery replacements for lithium ion.
Great. People, thank you so much. Was a nice conversation today. Diesel shortage.
Diesel, we need it.
It's coming.
Yes.
Have a fantastic week, you both.
You too.
You too. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you all. Thank you.